We all tell ourselves stories about who we are. I'm not good enough. I'm unlovable. This is just who I am. And we believe them. We build whole lives around them. Today's guest spent years out on the high seas working commercial fishing vessels, and she didn't know at the time that she was actually running from herself. Running through the binge drinking, through the shame, through a story she told herself for so long that it felt like the truth. This is a conversation about stories that keep us stuck and what happens when we finally come home to ourselves. It's honest, it's hopeful, and it might be exactly what someone needs to hear today. My guest has lived a life most of us can barely imagine and found a message in it that can help all of us. Colleen Clifford spent years as a commercial fisherwoman working on vessels out at sea. Today, she's a mental health advocate, a suicide survivor, and the author of Life Beyond the Binge, a commercial fisherwoman's journey home. She shares her story openly to others to find their way through addiction, shame, and the stories we tell ourselves toward healing and hope. Colleen, welcome to the show, and thank you for the courage you bring to this.
Stacey, thank you so much for having me.
You're so welcome. Now, Colleen, your story has this powerful thread. For years out on the water, you were in a sense of running from yourself. Take us there. What was that life like?
Well, the interesting thing is I didn't even realize that until recently when I began to write my book. So this story I created was so much in my subconscious mind that I didn't know it existed. But once I started trying to uncover why I was stuck in the binge drinking cycle that I was in, I figured out that it was a story beneath my behavior. So I created a story which created my binge behavior. And the story came about from a shameful event that occurred to me that was so traumatic when I was 19 that I buried it. I almost like I forgot it happened often because it was so impactful for me. And I ended up just kind of coincidentally getting a job on a fishing boat at the time with my girlfriend. And I discovered that leaving reality on land and being on a boat floating around the ocean was my safe space. Because at that time in the 80s, there was no Wi-Fi. I mean, literally people didn't know what we were doing out there in Alaska in the Bering Sea. So we were very far away from anyone. And I could spend 3 or 4 months out there. And that was just became my safe space.
I love that. And when did you begin to realize that the distance was actually your way of running from something inside you?
Not until recently. Yeah, I uncovered that when I after this event happened, I swore the moment I walked out, I don't want to tell too much about it, but I swore the moment after that I would never talk about it ever. And so I did a pretty good job of not talking about it for years. And I said to myself, I'll never get married. I'll never have children because I felt that I was unlovable due to this circumstance. So I told myself this story that I didn't question. And at the time, I couldn't Google anything, so I didn't have any help. I wasn't, I didn't talk to my mom about sex. I wasn't going to, it was a sexual event that happened. So I just said, good old, buckle up your bootstraps. And, that's that generation, right? Just move on. Don't ask for help and internalize it all. And I started to make choices that reaffirmed my belief that I wasn't lovable subconsciously, if that makes sense.
No, it makes total sense. You wanted to help people really understand binge drinking because it's so misunderstood. For someone listening who isn't sure where the line is, how would you define binge drinking and how is it different from what people might dismiss as just having fun?
Yeah, there is I think it's the CDC defines it as 4 or more drinks for a female, 5 or more for a male. In a 2 hour or in one incident. So like within 2 to 3 hours, you're pounding them back. So it's basically what we call partying. If you're at a college frat or just even at a Sunday barbecue, you're throwing back the beers or whatever you're drinking, a couple of shots of tequila, that's binge drinking.
You talk about something you call the 95/5 factor, how we stay stuck in denial and keep the habit going. Walk us through that because I think a lot of people will recognize themselves in it.
Another thing I uncovered when I was trying to figure out why I stayed stuck for years, I'm talking like 40 years of denying that binge drinking was a problem, is I didn't consider myself having an alcohol use disorder or AKA alcoholic. So because I didn't drink every day, I didn't drink all the time. And even when I did drink, I didn't always overdrink. And even when I overdrank, I didn't always have any repercussion, right? Like I might just have a hangover the next day. So you can, me or any of the listeners that maybe I've experienced this is, you know, after you go to a party or you're just hanging out with friends, you drink more than you expected. You wake up the next day and go, wow, I was only going to have 2 and I ended up having 6. And now I have this headache and I don't feel like doing anything today. Wow, I should really watch it or slow down. And you do, most people. I mean, unless you're the type that's going to start drinking again in the morning. And then, you know, that's a different type of drinker. But for me, I would always wake up the next day hungover and you know, usually a couple of self-talk like, oh my God, you drank too much. You know, do you have a problem? And those kinds of talk, self-talk. And so then I would behave like I would really monitor myself. Next party, I'm only going to have 2, like just really eat. You know, make sure I don't get too drunk. And you can do that for a while. And so that reaffirms your, oh, I've got it under control. I don't have a problem, right? I'm good. But then for me, there would be an instance when you let your guard down and you get drunk unexpectedly again, or you're feeling good at a party and you're like, I don't have to do anything tomorrow. I'm going to put back a few more drinks because I'm feeling good. And then maybe in that moment, something bad happens because you're drunk. And maybe not.
Yeah. Very true. Very true. The heart of it, the stories we build about who we are. You've talked about carrying a story that you were unlovable and how a whole identity can get built on top of something like that. Where do these stories come from?
I'm not, you know, I only am an expert in my experience. And so I think the story came from the reaction I got from the person that was my mentor, my person I held as authoritative, like someone who had the knowledge, the, you know, I was young, remember, I was 19. So it was impressionable. It'd be like if your father or mother figure, you look up to these kinds of people. And in this instance, it was a doctor that, and I was so shamed by my situation of why I went to go see him, I internalized it as, wow, I'm a disgusting young girl. You know, I just had no counseling around what my diagnosis meant. And here's where you can go for help. And, you know, doctors now are different, right? And all doctors aren't the same. So I think the bedside manner of this particular one was horrible. And I internalized his response to me as that must mean I'm disgusting and unlovable and who's going to want me and marry me. And I'm sure I over-exaggerated his, but it was such a traumatic experience for me too. And that's another thing I want to offer to listeners is that I created this story and it was completely wrong. It was an incorrect story about myself. And I think we're all different human beings. Now, if my sister had the same type of circumstance, she'd probably say, F you, and create a whole different story around her experience. But for me, and the way that I operate in the world as my type of personality and the way I cope, I internalized it as I'm unlovable. And I created that story.
And here's a question that you posed that I love. Are they even true?
Yes. I realized over the years that I never, because I was unwilling to share it with anyone, and I cemented it in my essence as this is me, this is my life is over. I considered it was like a death sentence for myself as a woman, like, you know, women typically want to maybe have children, right? I mean, not all women, but this is, I would have liked to have had children, but I told myself I can't have children because I didn't know anything about the possibilities. Could you have children? Actually, yes, you can. So I just assumed, I made these assumptions, and I created an untrue story, and I just proceeded to try to die by reckless behavior. That's what I believe. Just making really irresponsible, reckless choices, putting myself in dangerous situations around dangerous people because I didn't care.
Right. How does someone begin to question a story that they believed about themselves for their whole life?
Wow. I think there's some work to do around that because it's pretty hard to just shift a belief you've had your whole life. I mean, it can be maybe as simple as asking yourself, is that belief true? But if you really have believed it and lived your whole life, that simplistic question may not work for some people. I think it means maybe uncovering. It depends on what the belief is. For me, it was I was unlovable. So I started, you know, challenging that by learning to be kind to me and do lovable things for me, like allow myself love that I might give to a friend or a family member. And little by little, and then bigger by bigger, I realized, wow, I am lovable. And anyone around me will tell me that. That's the interesting thing too, is now that I share this, people say, what are you talking about? And so it's very interesting how we can be our worst critics, our worst advocates, or not an advocate at all for ourselves, right?
Right. Very true.
I think maybe for some people, it might mean seeking help with a professional if they really want to change their mind shift, change their story.
I agree. Now, for the listeners out there, this is one of those conversations that can generally change how someone sees themselves. So stay with us. And a note, if anyone, you know, or anything today resonates with you and you're struggling, I want to let you know that you can call or text 988, the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline, anytime. You're not alone. Follow The Advisor with Stacey Chalemi to hear more conversations that help you heal and come home to yourself. Now, shame is such a powerful, isolating force, and you've been open about it and how it shaped the story that you told yourself. Why is shame so powerful and so good at keeping us stuck and silent?
I believe that shame, it just attacks our feeling of who we are. So our sense of worth or worthlessness. So when this particular incident happened, and it's not like having guilt, it's just, it attacked my, who I am as a person. And I think I allowed someone else's reaction to help form this belief that wasn't true. So I gave my power away. And now I realize that, but at the time I didn't realize I was doing that. I gave my power away to this person, and you know, now I'm in a healthier space where I could question maybe that kind of a reaction, right? And I'm a stronger individual, but at the time I wasn't in the same, I didn't have the same tools or the same capacity to say, hey, you know, what the heck, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So what did it take for you to start bringing the things that you were most ashamed of into light? And what happened when you did?
Well, to be quite honest, I'm still working through that because it does make me feel, I mean, it's hard to talk about, you know, I didn't even name what it is that created the shameful incident on in this conversation. So it's, I'm a work in progress with sharing that, but I feel like and writing my book, I decided that I was going to lay it all out. As my dad said, wow, you really laid it all out. And I'm like, oh, is that a good or a bad thing? Right? Like, thanks, Pops, you know? Like, okay. And so I had to explain to him why I laid it all out, because if I don't, why bother telling my story? Because this is what happened to me that created my entire adult life of running away from myself and lack of self-love. And so I have to be brave enough to share it. And I mean, I guess I don't have to. I don't have to share any of this. But the it all came about kind of because I'm really here to share about my late husband's death by suicide. But really it all started because I wanted to start sharing about his death and bring awareness around suicide. Putting it all together, it's just becoming this too. Like it's both.
Yeah. Now, your book is a journey home, and I don't think you mean a place. What does coming home to yourself actually mean?
It means finding who I've always been, because I believe we are, you know, when you think about when we're kids and that childlike essence of who we are, that joyfulness, I think coming home to me means I've found it again, and I've learned to forgive. I've learned to accept all the parts of me now, all my experiences, the ones I'm not proud of, the ones I'm very proud of, and it's who I am today. And I can take it all and move forward in a direction that's really has intention, because now I'm not just moving on autopilot anymore.
Mm-hmm. Now, for the person listening who feels lost or stuck or like they're running from something, what did that journey home look like for you, and where does it begin?
For me, it began the day after my last binge, my unexpected partying, and I woke up the next day and thought to myself, this isn't who I want to become. And so I just thought, okay, what do I need to do to not be this person? And I asked for help. That's the first, I'm very proud of myself. It's a very courageous move. I've never asked for help really my entire life. I've always prided myself on being strong and independent. And I realized that, okay, if I really want to quit, I'll get some help.
Right. Now, I want you to speak directly to the person who needs this most. Someone listening right now who is struggling, maybe with drinking or maybe with shame, maybe with a story that they're not enough or not lovable and they feel alone in it. What do you want them to know?
I want them to know that we all have a purpose in life. I really believe that. And we all have something to offer this world. And if you're having a hard time seeing that in yourself, ask a friend. If you don't have a friend, ask someone that you trust. You can ask them, hey, what do you see in me that you like? And if you can't, you know, if you can write it down yourself, that's even better. Like if you can write down what it is you like about yourself and really focus on that, not the what you'd wish you could change. But, you know, maybe you like that when your neighbor's sick, you make them chicken soup, or I don't know, just whatever. These kind acts that you do in life, they don't have to be grandiose, but we just all have something to offer. And if you can find what that one thing is, it just magnifies the joy in your life. When I first did that for myself, Stacey, I realized that I'm a really kind person to strangers. I love to make people smile, because when I smile at them, they'll smile back. And it's just like a win for me, because I, especially if they're like this and then you smile at them and they smile back. And I'm like, that's my favorite thing to do in life. It doesn't cost anything and I'm really good at it. So I know that my thing in life is I make people smile. And my partner will say, why are you, you know, I said, because I love to do it. Like, you don't have to stand here with me if you don't want to be here, but this is my thing. Okay. You know, so it can be something as simple as that.
I love that. I love that. Now you have a book coming out tomorrow. Can you tell us a little about the book, where people can find it?
Yes, it's kind of a mouthful of a title because someone already had Life Beyond the Binge. So it's Life Beyond the Binge, A Commercial Fisherwoman's Journey Home. And it can be found on Amazon tomorrow. It's on Kindle right now, and I'm going to be doing an Audible version of it soon. That's my next tech thing I need to work through.
You can also tell you're very much a great speaker and you love to speak. And if people want to find you and they're interested in having you speak, where could they find you?
Well, my website's lifebeyondthebinge.com, and that's just, I keep it, that's my go-to place. But as far as the book goes, it's in honor of my late husband, Scott, who died by alcohol-related suicide. And it's a memoir, but also it's for the reader. And when he passed, I've always liked to write. So I started writing for Substack. I created a profile called Charter Waters, if anyone wants to get on Substack and check it out. But I just write random things. And I was writing a lot about his death and my grief process and everything. And I got a lot of feedback from people, positive, that just encouraged me to keep writing, even though it was really raw and just brought a lot of emotion. And I realized, wow, people they want to talk about this, or maybe read about it, or just have conversations. And so that really is what moved me, and the promise I made to him that I would do something in this world the remainder of my life to try to bring awareness around suicide. And so, and then I quit drinking. So this, he died 14 years ago. Rest in peace, Scott. And 5 years ago, I quit drinking. And so I started my own journey of evaluating why I was drinking. And then I put it all together in a book. Hopefully, you know, the hope is that it's entertaining for the reader, but also self-reflective. And it's all without judgment. It's just basically the question I keep asking is, it's binge drinking related, but how is it working for you? You're drinking. And you might decide it's working, and that's fine, right? But if it's not working, here's some things and some steps you might want to consider in a journey toward change.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. Well, for the listeners out there, the stories we tell ourselves can run our whole lives until the day finally turn around, face them, and ask, were they ever true? Now, Colleen Clifford found her way home through the drinking, through the shame, through the years of running. And today she reminded us that no matter how lost we feel, that journey home is possible for any of us. And Colleen, I want to thank you so much for your honesty, for your courage, for being able to tell our listeners about the things that you went through in life, which is not easy. People don't realize, but when people come on and they share a story of something painful in their life, it takes a lot of courage and it takes a lot of strength to rehash those stories and tell the public because all those emotions come to the surface. And I want to thank you once again, Colleen, for coming on the show, for sharing your story, for sharing your wisdom, and for making a difference in this world, because your story matters and you matter. And I want to thank you for everything that you're doing and helping others in this world today. So thank you so much for being on the show. It was an honor to have you here. And I hope you'll come back and we can talk some more.
I'd love that. Thanks so much, Stacy.
You're so very welcome. You have a great day.
I will. You too.